This year is being dedicated Leilui Nishmas Avram Hillel ben Yeshaya Grunfeld on his yahrzeit. May his neshama have an aliyah and be a schus for the entire family. Parshat Shlach is the parsha that deals with the sending of the meraglim, the sending of the spies. And we know the unfortunate result of what happened. The spies came back and they gave a negative report. And they said, and this is source number one, the people that dwells in the land are powerful. The cities are fortified and very great. And we also saw there the offsprings of the giant. And then we know that Caleb tried to silence the people toward Moshe. We shall surely ascend and conquer, for we can surely do it. But the men who had ascended with him said, we cannot ascend to the land, for it's too strong for us. They brought forth to the children of Israel an evil report of the land that they had spied out, saying, the land through which we have passed and spied out is the land that devours its inhabitants. All the people we saw in it were on Shemi Dot. They were huge. There we saw the Nephilim, the sons of the giant among the Nephilim. We were like grasshoppers in our eyes, and so we were in their eyes. This phrase is what Emir Tzashem we're going to focus in on today, where the spies said to the people, we look like grasshoppers. We felt like grasshoppers. And you know what? In their eyes, they look to us as grasshoppers. How did they know this? So Rashi brings the Medrash in source number 3. We heard them saying to each other, Nimalim yesh bakramim. There are ants in the vineyards, kanashim, which look like men. Right? There are different versions of the Medrash. But we still have to ask. Now, another question. The Pasuk says they looked at themselves as grasshoppers. According to Rashi, it seems like they weren't even like grasshoppers. They were like ants. Right? Ants are even smaller than grasshoppers. How do we understand the shift of language from ants to grasshoppers in Rashi? That's question one. Question two, and this is a question of Mishnat Sakhir, the author of Eima Barim Smecha, source 5, points out. He says, Ulcharak Hashem, my bay bazer shamru v'chein hayinu beinehem. V'lo dai b'ma shamru hayinu kechagavim beinehem. It would have been enough had they said, we felt like grasshoppers. Why did they need to add? And you know, in their eyes, they looked at us like grasshoppers or ants, whatever it is. What does that phrase come to add? Is it not enough the way they felt? Why did they need to say what the people of the land felt as well? So that's the first aspect we need to deal with. The second, which is probably the question on the parsha, is a question Rav Freiman articulates in source number 6. Yetar ken yikshel meraglim atzman kriyei dan sheishem nisiei Yisrael kayu rashim v'nisiim ba'am kasher safar. How is it possible that people who are so great, people who are the most outstanding members of Klal Yisrael, how could they have fallen? How could Klal Yisrael have been convinced? Where did they go wrong? What was the sin of the Meraglim? What was their mistake? Now, I'd like to begin, before we look at the three levels that we're going to study today, in Emir Tzashem, I want to begin with a very important disclaimer, and that is, and this is true of learning in general, what we're talking about, people in Tanakh, the Meraglim, we're talking about people who are so exalted, so like, we can't even compare ourselves to Chafetz Chaim, who couldn't compare himself to the Chasam Sofer, to the Gra, right? The Meraglim, we can't even begin to understand. So when we ask, well, what was their fault? What was their sin? It's something that is so, you know, sublime on their high, lofty level. But nevertheless, we ask the question, the Farshim asks the question, for what we can learn. Do we really know what their mistake was? No, we don't know. But can we try to look at different aspects to see what lesson we can learn from? Yes, that's what we have to do. So the first level of the three, to understand what went wrong with the Meraglim, and to see that this pasuk is a very key pasuk in this whole structure of understanding. The first will be the Ber Yosef, Rav Yosef Salant, source number 7. He quotes the Shlach HaKadosh, who writes, the kavanat ha-meraglim haita bira lasot ikuv l'Yisrael b'midbar. The Meraglim had an agenda. They wanted to keep the people in the desert. And they created a whole pretext in order to keep the Jews there. Why? Because they understood that they were being sent and not the other Nasiim and not other great people. And they understood that the other great people were being reserved to be the leaders in Israel. They were great people as leaders in the desert. But the desert is going to be a different experience. You need different leadership qualities than you need in the land of Israel. They were afraid that they were going to lose their position. They were afraid that they were no longer going to be leaders. And we all know that absolute power corrupts absolutely. And that is why they take all that they see and they're going to frame it in a way to convince the people that it's not right, that's not the right time to come into Israel. Kadosh Baruch Hu told Avraham Avinu that it'll be four generations, Ad Yishalem Avon HaMori, until the sin of the Amori is over, until they're deserving of being kicked out, that we have a certain time that the Amori are allowed to be in the land, and then we can come into the land. So they tell Klal Yisrael, and this seems to be like a very religious reasoning, it's not time yet, right? Devar b'tomatov, everything in its right time. And that's why they explain in the bracket in 7 that the Kananim are anshei midos, which we understand it to be people of greatness, of height, midot. But you could also understand it as midos tovos. They have good midos. They are, you know, people who are good people. And therefore, it's not the right time yet. Their sin isn't up. Their time isn't up. And therefore, we can't go into the land. And that's how they explain in 8 the idea of kachav gavin, which means ulam lefi divrei source 8 hashlava klayakar now b'mashak etuvan shemido retzulamar bale mido tovo uminagim b'yosher v'tzedek, they act righteously and correctly velo shalem in avon amori legarshamin aretz, that's not just time to throw them out of the land. And also they said, Vanehi beinenu kachagavim, hainu shayu beineim kamo chagavim v'arbeh hagozlim v'chomtzim v'ochlim et pri yigiyatam v'malam shabalei haaretz v'asadot. They said, if we were to go into the land now, we would appear in our own eyes as robbers. Grasshoppers are used as a model for those who eat from the land. We know that grasshoppers, look in Yoel, the first parak, they'll eat everything, through to the bark, right? Grasshoppers, brings the Gemara as a proof for this, are the classic animals that will just eat everything in sight. So this is what the Meraglim were saying. In our eyes, if we were to come into the land, we would look at ourselves, we looked at ourselves as Gazlanim. They've worked so hard to, you know, work at the fields and to produce all this fruit. And we're going to come in and take over? That's like grasshoppers. And they specifically use this animal because they feel like we'll be robbers. And obviously, Klal Yisrael, who have a conscience, will say, oh my gosh, we can't go in. They're not deserving it. We don't want to be robbers. It's interesting because you could flip this around in 12, that we heard them saying, Rashi, right? We heard them saying, there are ants in the Kremim. The Kedushas Levi, Rav Levi Yitzhak of Berdichev, explains that we know about ants, that ants are very careful not to steal, right? If an ant smells a little piece of grain that another ant had touched, it won't get near it. So V'chein Hayinu Beinehem, says the Kedushas Levi, we heard them saying, these look like Jews in the vineyards. They look like ants. And we're not afraid that they're going to come and take the land because ants are careful not to steal. So from our perspective, we look like grasshoppers if we go in and take the land. From their perspective, they look at us like ants and they are rest assured that we weren't going to take anything that doesn't belong to us. Which then leads us to that larger question, well, how could we take the land? Which brings us to a famous Rashi in source number 9. It's the way that Rashi begins the Chumash, where Amar Rabbi Yitzchak, Lo hayat zarich latchil to Torah ela machodesh azel lachem, she mitzvah rishona, she mstavu Yisrael. Should not the Torah have begun with the first mitzvah, the first commandment, which is the commandment of the new moon? Uma tam patach b'breishit, why does it begin with the story of creation? Mishum koach masa v'gid lamo latelam to teach us that Hashem has the right to give us the land that because he's created the world. That if the Umos HaOlam say, if the nations say, how could you take over this land? You're stealing? We can answer. Birtzono natna ubirtzono natla. Hashem gave it to you and can take it away from you. And he can give it to whoever he wants because he is the boss. He's the owner. He's the creator of the world. And hence we begin the whole story of Chumash with the creation. And this says, the Ber Yosef, it's a very fundamental idea. He says, well, couldn't any nation say that? Couldn't any nation argue, you know, like the Crusades, right? We're coming into the land. We're taking over the land. God wanted us to have the land. Why can't any nation say that? What right do we have over the land? So says the Ber Yosef, that's why Hashem put giants in the land. That's why Hashem put fortified cities. Hashem Dafka put fortified cities and giants, not to scare the people, but rather to show that it is impossible to conquer the land al piderech hateva in a natural way. And therefore, if and when the Klal Yisrael conquer the land, it will clearly be supernatural. And that's the indication that Hashem wanted them to get the land. Because it was impossible to conquer the land in a natural way, that's the greatest indication that they are not taking and usurping that doesn't belong to them, but rather God who created the world gave it to them. And hence you see the whole book of Yoshua, right? The walls of Yericho come tumbling down. That's not nature. Shemesh B'Givon Dome, that the sun stops in Givon. It's not nature. It's not natural. Right? Hail comes down from heaven. It's not natural. That supernatural way that we conquered Eretz Yisrael is a clear indication that this is the hand of God and this is what HaKadosh Baruch Hu wanted. So therefore, my friends, on the first level, what was, again, in quotes, the sin of the Meraglim? It was they had a personal agenda of kavod, of honor. And because of this agenda of honor, they manipulated, they warped all that they saw into creating a whole story, weaving a whole story of it's not the right time, and we'll be like robbers, and this isn't the appropriate thing to do. All creating what seems to be a good pretext why they can't go in, when really their agenda was to keep themselves as the rulers, as the leaders in the Midbar. And we know the Ber Yosef ends by saying they were not, you know, Anshei Midos of Midos Tovo. They were a depraved nation. We're told we can't act like them. What they do is just despicable. So for sure, their time was up, and there was no question about it that they had to be taken out of the land, and it was the time for the Jews to come in. The lesson, obviously, for us, my friends, is how careful we have to be about kavod. It's a famous maisa, I believe, Rabbi Yehuda Leib Chasman, who was at the gathering of Rabbanim, and they were discussing a certain issue. And an elderly rabbi got up and said, I'm old. I don't care about my kavod and my honor anymore. Listen to me, I know I'm right. And Rabbi Chasman got up and said, I don't care how old you are, kavod is something that never dies. No matter what age you are, people like kavod, people like being listened to. Other taifas, you know, when you get old, you know, chocolate ice cream may not speak to you at 90 years old. It may, I don't know, it depends. But it's not the same as kavod. Kavod is something that is with a person, a may of Esrim. And therefore, we have to be very careful when deciding things and making decisions, important decisions. We have to ask ourselves, are we saying what we're saying because our kavod is on the line? Because it's our, you know, it's going to offend me? Or, like, where is it at? And you have to be honest. And it's hard to be honest. Because a person sometimes, because of their honor, and because they want to look good, will cloud certain things. And will, you know, weave a story that's not an honest story just to make themselves look good. The lesson we learned from the Meraglim is the honesty that we need to have with ourselves and with others. And to be able to call a spade, you know what? I'm no gay badavar. To say, I'm, you know, I have a personal vested interest in this. I'm not the best person to talk to. You better talk to somebody else. That's honest. Or I have a vested interest, and this is my interest, and this is why I'm saying what I'm saying. That's honest. But to say, you know, I have no vested interest, and I'm doing it for the best, for the group, and this is what we need, and you have a vested interest, and you're well aware of it, then that's the problem. That's level one. Level number two. Rav Dessler, strive for truth. A person must consider his options very carefully. He must minimize worldly endeavor only to the degree which is consistent, source 14, with his true spiritual level. He must judge the extent of deprivation he will be able to hear, to bear, should his endeavor not be blessed with the success for which he had hoped. The weighing of options is an extremely delicate operation. The evil inclination lurks on both sides. If the person engages in more endeavor than his faith warrants, he will come close to God denial. If he does less than his true status permits, he may be filled with remorse and eventually come to deny God. Rav Desler speaks about at length that famous discussion of the Shtadlers versus Bitochon, and there's a lot of ink written about this. How much effort should I put in, and how much should I step back and say God's running the show and I know what's best? And as Rav Desler speaks about, for some people to buy a lottery ticket, that's the level of faith they're on, and that is all the Shtadlers, that's all the effort they need to do. Other people have to work 10 hours a day. And again, every person, where they draw the line, it's not as drawing a line in the sand. We know for Yosef HaTzadik to say to Sarah Mashkim, right, remember me, don't forget me, 2 extra years in prison. If one of us would say that, we would be held accountable if we didn't use our Hishtadlos and just had Bitachon if we weren't on that level. And that's why it's a very, very challenging idea to understand. With this, we can appreciate that you've got to be careful. You know, if a person is on a high level, too much Hishtadlos, they're held accountable. Person's on a low level, too much Bitachon is above them. And you have to try to work within at least an area of where a person is. With this, we can understand in 15 precisely what was the sin which all Israel unwittingly fell. Ramban tells us that Israel made a seemingly reasonable request. It is normal and proper for an army contemplating invasion to send out parties to determine the best route to adopt and to estimate the strength and nature of the probable resistance. The mistake was that they failed to take their special circumstances into account. A nation which had seen the saving presence of Hashem constantly among them should have mustered enough faith to follow unquestionably after the cloud. Moshe gave in to them only because he saw they were set on this course. He thought that we've not to agree would be worse to them in their eyes. And he goes on to say at the asterisk in 15, they may have thought they were doing a mitzvah by minimizing the miracle. But this was not the mitzvah demanded of them at that moment. People who were constantly aware of the miraculous providence of Hashem should have been prepared to abandon all desire for human endeavor and to rely without question on faith alone. But once they made the fatal mistake of seeking the way of human endeavor, Moshe felt he could no longer prevent them from adopting this course. If we had, according to Rav Desler, to distill down what was the problem of the Chet HaMeraglim, it was that Klal Yisrael should not have asked for Meraglim. Klal Yisrael who saw Hashem face to face at Har Sinai. Klal Yisrael who saw that mountains were being leveled as they're traveling. And a 3-day journey they're doing in a day. I mean, this was like, whoa, man coming from heaven, you can't believe this. Such people, for them to ask for spies, that was beneath their level. That was like a Yosef HaTzadik. And that was the challenge. But it goes even more than that. We know that, and this is source number 16, second paragraph, we know that when Moshe Rabbeinu sent them out, Kulam Anashim, they were great people. But yet the Chumash tells us that they went with a negative approach from moment go. How do you reconcile that? So the Maharal says very beautifully. He says that the spies, the Maharal reconciles the seeming contradiction by suggesting that since those who sent them were evil men, the spies learned from them and became like those who sent them. It is an amazing and frightening thought that men who are outstanding greatness and character among that generation should have fallen from such heights and depths of depravity and God denial in such a short time. And the cause? They were infected by the evil of those who sent them. And this was that they wanted more endeavor than was warranted to them. And indeed, as of Gedalia Shur, quoting this Michtav and this Maharal, develops this in source 17 and explains in the Or Gedaliah. that this is pshat in shlach lecha ledatcha, send according to your mindset, which means the Meraglim needed to go in with the glasses of Moshe Rabbeinu. The glasses of Moshe Rabbeinu are the glasses of l'malo min ha-teva, above the natural order. Had they walked in and they looked at Israel from that perspective, they would have seen Hashem's hand al kol tzad v'shal at every step of the way. As Rav Shua, we mentioned this idea many years ago, says, why do you just look at the Anakim, the giants that are in Hebron? Why are you not focusing on the great giants that were buried in Hebron, the Avram, Yitzchak, and Yaakov? If you were to look at the land from a spiritual perspective, then you would have come away feeling ignited, sparked, enthused. We can do it. The Avos are buried here. We have Zchus Avos. We have the Siyata Deshmaya, the help of our forefathers. What was their problem? Their problem is that they went in not with the mindset and the glasses of Moshe Rabbeinu, but the glasses of the people. It's a strong nation. I don't know if we can conquer it. And they came in looking at the land, not from the perspective of Hashem Yilachem Lachem Vatem Tachrishu, that God will fight for you and you will be silent. But rather, they came in from the perspective, okay, where do we set up armies? Where do we set up troops? How are we going to fight this war? They looked at it from a very human endeavor. And now we can appreciate when the Medrash says in source number 19, that the Medrash says, how did you know that the giants looked at you like ants? Maybe they looked at you like angels. What was their problem? 28. Ubemet hayazen nechshav lechet lemeraglim shepachadu kolkach mipnei hanefilim b'nei ha'anak. They were so afraid of these giants that they looked at themselves as grasshoppers, and they projected on the giants that they were ants. And therefore, when they looked at it this way, this was the problem. Had they looked at it from the perspective that Hashem is fighting for them, so then they could have seen, you know what? The giants looked at us like angels, spiritual beings. They were afraid. They knew that we had God on their side. They knew that this was going to be a supernatural war, right? Like after the splitting of the sea, the nations were afraid. Had the spies gone in on the level of the glasses of Derech Hanes, the supernatural, they wouldn't have said, and we were also in their eyes like ants. No, they would have said, we were like angels. They're afraid of us. We're not worried about them. The fact that they diminished themselves such beyond the grasshopper to the ant level is an indication that they were looking at this from the vantage point of ishtadlos, of what physical endeavor, which may have been fine and nice for anyone else, but not for this generation who saw such great miracles. And my friend, obviously, the lesson for us on this level, and it's a challenging lesson, is to be able to try as best as we can. And sometimes we need outside, you know, a selech harav, knei lecha chaver, a rebbe, a mentor, a friend, to help us gauge what level we're on. To be honest with ourselves, are we trying too hard? Are we trying not hard enough? And where is that delicate balance in our lives? 21. Again, Rav Dessler, but if the balance is indeed so delicate and the danger of error so great, a person may well ask himself, how can I ever expect to get to the truth? The answer is that everyone can get to the truth if he wants to. If he makes a supreme mental effort to view the problem from the truth perspective, his heart will infallibly discern the true course to adopt. Even after the Yetzer has persuaded the person to accept the false way as true, he still knows in his heart of hearts that the true path is truer than the other one. And that's what a person has to do. A person has to be able to be honest with himself, just like the first level, where you have this sense of honesty. And this is one of the ways of looking at the title of gigantic grasshoppers. When you're a grasshopper, you have to be able to be a gigantic grasshopper. Gigantic in the sense of great within yourself, that you know yourself, that you're honest with yourself. That's the gigantic part. You can be a grasshopper, but you got to know where you're holding in life. What helps a person? Prayer is one thing. Pray with devotion until you recognize that everything comes from Hashem. That even if you don't at first succeed in your endeavors, you will know that your lack of success too is decreed by Hashem. Two, reflection. Reflect constantly on the importance of trust in Hashem. Read about trust in our holy sources. Even when you're engaged in necessary physical endeavor, be aware that you're only fulfilling the decree by the sweat of your brow. Realize that your will have is decreed, and the extent of your endeavor will not alter this. And also keep in mind in 23 that there are some people who fail to engage in physical endeavor out of sheer laziness while they attribute it to their trust in Hashem. One thing may be sure, and that is that to the extent that one fails to work as a result of laziness, one will certainly lose. To say, oh, I believe God will provide for me, and that's just because you don't want to go out and work, but that's not really where your level is holding, then my friends, it's not going to work. And again, that's where the honesty lies. You know, recently I had a student who's going through in vitro fertilization cycle. And she asked me, before she goes through this cycle, she wants during the cycle to learn something with her husband. What should they learn? So my suggestion to her was to learn books about Emunah, whether it's, Living Emunah, it's an excellent sefer, or Pinkus, whatever she's drawn to. I said, because when you're working with something which is so technical, you know, blood tests and counts and, you know, and all of this, these levels, you can get so caught up in, well, the number's good or the number's not good again. And you forget that this is just the hishtadlus that you need, and Hashem is running the show. And this is the key of our lives. Aside from prayer, aside from reflection, or part of what reflection is about, is we have to strengthen our emunah. We have to work on recognizing, and prayer enables us to do this. We have to recognize that Hashem is the one who has decreed exactly what we will have, when we will have it, how we will have it. And we have to be able to realize that the more we strengthen ourselves in emunah, the more we're able to honestly reflect within ourselves. Am I holding here or not? When you read a story and you say, oh, I could never be on that level, great. If that's your gut feeling, that means you're not there yet. But if you say, oh, I'm not there yet, I'd love to get there, that's also an indication of where you're moving toward. And sometimes reading these for him oftentimes gives us that barometer that we need of where we're holding, where we want to hold, and perhaps where we should be holding. So my friends, we saw two ideas. Now I want to get to the idea that is for me the main idea of today. Idea number one, what was the problem of the Meraglim? Very simple. The Meraglim, who were tremendous people, had a personal negiah. They had a personal vested interest. They didn't want to lose their kavod, their honor. So they distorted everything. You know, these people are on Shei Midos, they have good Midos, and we'll be like Chagavim, we'll be like grasshoppers, we'll be stealing, and obviously we can't do that. And God put the giants here specifically so that they should know that it is supernatural. How careful we have to be that when we make decisions, recognize where is the ego and the I and the self in this decision. And how loud is its voice? Idea number two, my friends, is the Rav Dessler, Mechtem Eliyahu, that there has to be a balance between, the delicate balance between ishtadlus, doing your physical endeavor, and bitachon, faith in God. For these people that cross the line, they should not have sent spies. When they did send spies, they sent them, and the spies went from the perspective of the natural. And that was also a mistake. They had to go im kfar as kfar in the perspective of the supernatural. When they saw everything in the natural way, they looked, they said, oh my gosh, we're like grasshoppers. They look at us like grasshoppers, like ants. There's no way we can go. And obviously that created a lack of morale among the people. And they said, you're right. There's no way we can go. Because on the physical endeavor, they weren't able to go. But they left out the spiritual, the giants that are buried there, the schlossofos. The third approach, which have a number of dimensions to it, we'll begin with Rosh Sirim Rav Reis, where he speaks about why did Hashem indeed put the giants there? What was the point? The giants were there in order for the people not to say, Kochi votzim yod yasali techayel uzeh. God didn't want the people to walk in the land and say, aha, look how strong we are, look how great we are. He wanted them to recognize that Hashem was the one fighting for them. However, 26. Ulam bad bivad. However, hand in hand, im hazharot, with these warnings about gaiva, husharnu kamo kain li shomer mina nava shalobim koma, shitototeh chamerot lo pachot. You also have to be careful of false modesty. You also have to be careful of putting yourself down too much. And there's also a yetzahara here. And this is why you see this as well. When they said, Venehi beinenu kechagavim v'chein hayinu beinehem, the bracket in 26, haitazu shiflut ruach shelo bimkoma. It was inappropriate. It was putting themselves down too much. And that's what tripped them up to make this mistake. And it's interesting, he quotes here of Avadya Bar Tanura, of why does Rashi switch it from ants instead of grasshoppers? And he says very careful, very succinctly, that when a person looks at themselves in a low way, shehagvohim ro'im etaktanim b'tzura muktenet yoter me'shein be'emet. When you have a low self-esteem, it gives off the vibes that people around you look at you even lower. You look at yourself as a grasshopper and you walk around, you know, people look at you as an ant. They look at you as they can step right on you. What was the problem, the miraculum? They walked in and they told the people, who are we to conquer the land? We're like grasshoppers, like we're ants. We can't do this. Where my friend quotes his Fasemis in 24. He says, why did the miraculum think they were not equal to the task? Says his Fasemis, the bracket in 24. Because they reported that the inhabitants of the land were giants and they were we were in our eyes like grasshoppers next to them. If they think of themselves as grasshoppers, then all is lost. When your self-image is that of an insignificant insect, how can you have the initiative and the drive and the courage to do anything? Don't think it's wonderful to say you're like a grasshopper. Oh, it's, you know, modest. We're nothing. No, there's a problem being a grasshopper. There's even a bigger problem being an ant. When you put yourself down that way, you feel like, well, what can I do? What can I accomplish? This is a virus which is miraculously affected the Jewish people. The self-image of the grasshoppers, the feeling of worthlessness and inadequacy in the face of adversity. This is an essential element in the Bechiel Adoros, the weeping of Jews have continued for future generation. We cannot, because we are like grasshoppers. If we turn to a moment to this Letitcha Elyon, who quotes the Sabo of Mitzlobodka, source 34, he says, HaKadosh Baruch Hu barat ha'adam bekochot v'chushim uflaim. Hashem created us with such fantastic spiritual and physical reservoir. Liot shalita kol ha'aretz, to rule over the whole world, from one end of the world to the other. Im kein ech yitachein sheibitu al atzman kachagavim. How could they look at themselves in such a lowly way? Al zeh od HaKadosh Baruch Hu viter. Okay, you look at yourself as small. Aval hakash shelo hakiru begadlutam v'yusfurim shegam b'nei goyim nirim kach. Al zeh Kipita Kodesh Baruch Hu V'lo Viter. Okay, so you will probably look at yourself this way. But you think that others look at you this way? That Hashem couldn't stand at all. How can you look, how can you understand that others will look at you in this way? Yishkan limud yisodim ma'ot shesharesh kakol chatei hadam himishum shelo hishrish b'tocho etam abad amiti al olam. Our problem is we don't have a good perspective of the world. This is where all the problems stem from. And indeed, if we go back to 28, the Kutzker Rebbe, a lot of the Mefarshim quote this, said, the mistake of the spies was in the words, and so we were in their sight. It should not bother a person how others view him. What was the problem? Notes the Saba Sobotka, notes the Kutzker Rebbe, and other Mefarshim as well. When you have such a low image, and not only do you have a low image, but you project that low image on the way others view you, and notes the Kutzker Rebbe, and you care about how others view you, then you're sunk. You have to be strong enough to say, I am worthwhile. I am valuable. I have been given the kochos of Hashem. And to deny that is a denial of the basic fundamental aspects of belief in God. Indeed, Rav Reis back in 27 points out, the Medrash Tanchuma, Amru v'nehi b'einenu kocho, govim, amar kosh baruch hu v'tarti aleha. The fact that you said you were like grasshoppers, I can understand. V'chein hayinu b'einehem makpirani, v'chi yodim atem ma'asiti etchem b'einehem, mi omar lachem shalo ayitim b'einehem k'molochim. How do you know for sure that they were saying you look like ants? Maybe that they were saying you look like angels. And he says that the problem is when you looked at yourselves like grasshoppers, you caused them to look at you like ants. Had you looked at yourselves as malachi, as one, literally a malach is one who is sent on a mission. Had you seen yourself as going on a mission, which means that you're here for a purpose and you're being sent by a Kodesh Baruch Hu, Shlach Lecha, the Sfasemes has many, many of his mamorim on this. Shlach Lecha is a Kodesh Baruch Hu sent our neshama into this world. We are all malachim, all of us, my friends. When we view ourselves as a malach, that Hashem has sent us into this world, and we realize our inherent greatness, then I'm not going to look at myself like a grasshopper, and others aren't going to look at me this way either. And the Eish Tamid, Rav Druk, new Sefer, just came out. The way others look at you is very dependent on how you look at yourself. If you look at yourself as strong, as someone who has, you know, self-confidence, and others are going to look at you that way. But if you look at yourself like, oh, I'm such a nebuch, then others are going to look at you that way. And this you see clearly, he says, from Sefer Shmuel. Shaul HaMelech listens to the people, doesn't kill the king, and keeps the best of the sheep. And Shmuel HaNavi says to him, even if you look at yourself small in your eyes, right, you're from the smallest of the Shvatim Binyamin of the tribe, but you're still the king. And you have to look at yourself as great. Because when you look at yourself as small, you're going to be very easily influenced by the people. If you look at yourself with strength and understand you're godless, your inherent greatness, the people are going to respect that, and people are going to respond to that. Rabosai, this Nakuta, and this is where I want to go for the next few minutes, Amir Shashem, is really the foundation of the Jewish people as a whole, and each and every one of us individually. How we look at ourselves. What was the downfall of the Meraglim, this line? That they looked at themselves as grasshoppers, and they projected that those around them looked at them like grasshoppers, or even worse, when you look at yourself like a grasshopper, as the Bartanura says, they're going to look at you like ants, as nothing. How important it is, the feeling of self that a person needs to have. Let's work on it on the global level, on the communal, national level, and then the individual level, both very briefly. One of the most beautiful Sichos Mussars, very famous one, Nechbadus, Vayomas 31, Yosef v'chol lechav v'chol ador ahu. The Rav Chaim Shulevitz brings down the pasuk that Yosef HaTzadik died to all his brothers, that whole generation. And he quotes a very famous Rav Chaim HaKadosh. Shekol zman shechad min achim haya kayam, as long as one of the brothers was alive, hayu amitzrim mechabdim et bnei Yisrael, the Egyptians honored the Jews. Va'av kishaya achad ma'adur ahu kayam, hayu chashuvim bnei Yisrael by name. Even when one person from that generation was alive, they looked at them with honor. And they would never have even dared to subjugate them. However, when they all began to die, then the brothers themselves, that the next generation, yardu lamatu madregatam shayu beinayim nivzim, they didn't have that sense of self-worth. Once the Jewish people, says the Or HaChaim HaKadosh, lost their sense of self-worth, the nations were able to come in and they were able to subjugate us. And this Rabbi Zion Zaks in Menachem Zion echoes this idea very beautifully, a very long essay we'll just highlight. And he makes two very important points. He says, point number one is the Aleinu L'Shabeach, which we know Chazal say Yeshua instituted, reminds us every day of this national pride. Shelo asanin kegoye haratzos, that Hashem didn't make us like them. Right? Samcho kenu kahem. We're different than them. We have to say this with pride. Aleinu is one of the most important tfilos that the Malachim almost look forward to. This is not a time to run out of shul. This is a time where we have that feeling of, look how great we are. Not in the sense of, you know, in a haughty sense, but in the sense of reality that Hashem has created us as a captain of the ship. And there's a beautiful pasuk in Yirmiyah, b'meistarim tifkei nafshi mipnei gava. Kadosh Baruch Hu kivyachol hides in a secret place and cries for the Jewish people because mipnei gavatam shel Yisrael shenat lamem v'nitter al umas olam, the pride of Israel that has fallen and been given to the other nations. When the Jewish people lose the sense of atah bechartanu, that we are the chosen nation, when the Jewish people want to be like everybody else, then, when we've lost that sense of pride, that's when the nations come and they begin to attack us. And we've seen this throughout Jewish history. You know, our gut feeling is, well, if we, you know, are separate and different, then the goyim will hate us. If we become like them, they'll love us. And we have found the exact opposite. When we become like them, they become jealous of us. And that's when we begin to assimilate. That's when they begin their pogroms and they begin trying to oust us. We have to walk around with this feeling of pride. And he says, "Vanehi beinenu kachagavim," the fact that we looked at ourselves in 33 like grasshoppers brought us to the extent v'chein hayinu beineyam kasher nashim minamachim et atzman, when people lower themselves to like these creepy crawly figures, then what happens? Then we are looked at like ants that look like people, that they don't even look to us as people. They look like ants. You know, ants look like people. They have, and this is why Hashem cries, they have brought us down to a level beneath being human. My friends, I don't need to give examples in Jewish history. They are unfortunately all too many of what the nations have done that have been dehumanizing to us as a people. My friends, it has to be first and foremost. And this is the lesson of the Meraglim. And this is the Bechiya L'Doros. This is the crying for generations. This is what the Kutzker Rebbe says. Don't worry about what other people think. Know who you are. Be proud of who you are. Wave that Jewish flag. Wave your banner of your Judaism, of your tzitzis, of your kippah with pride. Because this is what makes us unique and special. And this is what brings God's protection over each and every one of us. My friends, if this is true on the national level, it is equally true on the individual level as well. We know we'll start in 37. The Saba of Slobodka would always ring the words of Rabbeinu Yonah, that this is a Slobodka Shita. This is their calling. HaPetach HaRishon Hu Sheida HaIsh HaOved Erech Atzmo. First and foremost, a person has to know their greatness. V'yakir malato malad avotam v'gadlutam v'chashivutam v'chibatam etzol bar yisparach. Know how great you are, your forefathers were, and their greatness, their belovedness in front of Hashem. And that's what you have to work on at all times. He quotes the old Moshe, quotes in 38, the first 38 on the top left, from the Pachad Yitzchak Rav Yitzchak Utner Zatzal, who said, Hayom en Yitzra Davod Zorah, today we don't have the drive to run after idolatry. Aval Yesh Yitzra Dimyonit Acher, but we have another Yitzhara. You know what that is? Vahu Shanashim Einam Maminim Batzvam. That people don't believe in themselves, that we have low self-esteem. That's also a problem. That's also a negative. But say for Mishas Rav Aaron Rav Aaron Cutler Zatzal Katuv, V'chayiv Adam Lisbonim V'la'akir Chashivus Hagdolo Sheish Bo Batzmuto. A person has to recognize their intrinsic greatness. U'bekoach Shemitaveh Bo B'Po'olim HaKarato V'Chashivut Zo. And when you recognize this, then you'll be able to live a life where your actions are going to reflect this aspect of greatness. Bonim Atem LaShem, you are children to Hashem, the special close relationship to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And with this, the second 38 says, Tiva Torah Vayigba Libo V'Derech Hashem. When you realize you're right, and when you realize you're great, and you realize what the right thing is, and you're not worried about what other people say, this is the way of a Ben Yisrael. That a person shouldn't be, you know, saying, oh, what are people going to say about me? And they're going to be misalzel, and they're going to make fun of me. It's irrelevant. If what you're doing is correct, and you're doing it from a place of that I want to do Ritzon Hashem, the will of God, and I'm going to go out and do this, no matter what people say, it's coming from a place of chashivos, of important. When I realize that this is what Hashem wants from me, where I will get up and I will wash and bench, you know, at a party, at a restaurant, or with friends, and they'll all make fun of me. Wow, you're so frumy, you wash and you bench. Yes, it's not a big deal, and you don't have to make a big deal, but you stand up and say, this is the correct thing to do. I recognize my inherent greatness. I recognize my relationship with God, and I'm not embarrassed by it. And that is going to lead a person to do what is right and not be afraid, well, what would others think? And it's interesting, because I just had this today, where I, without getting specifics, I had a judgment call. I made a judgment call in Sneas. And the judgment call could have gone in many different ways. And I made this call. And I did something that, I didn't do something that I felt was appropriate. And then, in retrospect, I'm thinking to myself, oh my gosh, what will people say when they, being again very vague here, when they realize, oh my gosh, this is what she did. And I'm like saying to myself, did I do this wrong? And my daughter said to me, Ima, you know what you did was correct. What you did was what Ritzon Hashem is. So it doesn't matter what other people say. What you have to realize is you should be proud of what you've done. I'm like, did you hear this year? Like, you know this year better than I do. It's hard. It's not easy. We are very conscious of what others will say. But again, as a 14-year-old has clarity that sometimes older people don't have, if this is correct, then you have to work on it with pride. With our final idea, and then we'll end, my friends, with a story, a beautiful story, 39. Ish echad, ish echad, l'matev otav, says Rav Shmuel Bar Zil, b'shili nivra olam. Each one was sent out, an individual from their tribe. Had they realized that they were individuals, had they realized, shi'abi kol achai v'echad al atzmo ki yochid v'olam, then they would have become great. The problem was the Eidah. The problem was that they grouped together. Again, the imagery of grasshoppers is grasshoppers come in droves. Ants, you ever seen ants in your house lately? Hope not. They also come in groups. What was their problem? They viewed themselves as a group, And they lost that sense of individual responsibility where the world is resting on me and the decision that I need to make. If a person would feel that achrayus, that responsibility, that I need to look out for what is appropriate and right and do what's right and not be swept along with everyone else, the grasshopper, the ants, the part of the crowd, the edara'a, you know, the Sfarim say, you're born as an original, don't die as a copy. And that's very important, that we have to keep this originality. And as Rav Freifeld in 41 points out, a person is the crown jewel creation, the Almighty's own handiwork. A person, every person, is the most exalted being in the cosmos, and he has access to Siyata Dishmaya. So on this third level, my friends, and I think this level is so crucial, what was the problem of the spies? Too much humility. A. B. That too much humility led them to view and project that others thought of them in a lowly way, not as malachim, not as their divine role that they were given. Further, the fact that they were so concerned about what others would say about them and what others viewed them as was equally a mistake. What you have to worry about is what is right, what is correct. When you have ish echad l'motav otav, you have that feeling of each individual stands on their own and each individual has to look at what's correct with that sense of pride, not gaiva, not haughtiness, but pride. I am a child, a son, a daughter, a prince, princess of a Kodesh Baruch Hu. This is what he wants from me. And you're right, sometimes it's a very great. Sometimes it's much clearer. But not to walk around saying, oh, I'm a Jew, I keep kosher. Right? You know, with pride. Go to your boss and say, I know there is communal lunch going on. I keep kosher. I'm going to bring my own lunch or we could order out. But with pride, I'm a Jew and I hold by this Jewishness. And people will respect you for that. They will be careful what they say around you, knowing that certain language is inappropriate. They'll be respectful of your customs. When you hide it and you try to be like everyone else, that's when we have the problems. That's when a Kodesh Baruch Hu is crying. Shelo asanu kugoli ha'aretzot. Understand when we say this, and aleinu to have kavana of the pride that we should have of being the Atah b'chartanu, the chosen nation, we just said on Yom Tov in our davening, as well as my friends individually. The problem today's generation is we're embarrassed for who we are. We don't have enough pride in ourselves. We're so concerned what others are going to say about us. Be comfortable in self. And when you're comfortable in self, you'll have the siyata, the shmaya, the help from above to break down the barriers, to move forward, to be able to really grow in avodas Hashem. Let me end with a story, which is a very powerful story, which I think brings the message home of the power of the individual when one realizes that the world rests on us, what abilities we have and are able to do. The story comes from one of Rabbi Spiro's latest Sfarim, Touched by series, where he speaks about a BBC reporter interviewed a man in his 80s who was part of the Kinder transport to Britain in the late 1930s, the beginning of the war. And the man was talking about some of the experiences, reminiscing as a child. And he spoke about one particular boy who he called Daniel. Daniel came to this orphanage and was not acclimating at all. He missed his parents terribly and was putting up a great fuss. He wasn't bathing. He wasn't eating. He was just being difficult. So the people didn't know what to do. So they finally said, King George VI is coming to visit. You'll be able to speak to him. But in order to speak to him, you have to, bathe and eat and, conform. So for 2 weeks, this boy was on perfect behavior, knowing that he was going to speak to King George VI. Sure enough, the long-awaited day came, and there was a whole ticket parade, and they set up these barricades as King was going through on his horse through the city, and little Daniel realized that he was duped. He wasn't going to be able to have a one-on-one rendezvous with the king. He was going to be able to see the king, but like everyone else, just wave from the sidelines. And when the king's chariot passed by, he couldn't hold himself back, and he jumped the barricade. Today's day and age, I believe he would probably have been shot. But in those days, they still had a little bit more patience than today. And the guards jumped the boy and, like, you know, tackled him down. And the king saw this ruckus going on. And he said, bring the boy up to me. And the little boy looks at him and says, are you the most powerful person in this kingdom? And the king says, yes. And the king says, what can I do for you? And the little boy says, I want you to bring back my parents from Germany. I want you to bring my parents back to me. I can't be without them. And the king looked at this boy and he says, I'm sorry, but we're at war with Germany. I can't bring your parents here. And the little boy looked at him and said, but I thought you just told me you were the most powerful being in this land. You can do anything. Sure enough, in a very short time afterwards, Daniel's parents arrived at this orphanage and created their own home. And the end of the story is this BBC, in this BBC report, this man who they were interviewing, who was retelling the story, began to cry, began to tear. And he said, if only I had that same gumption and same drive as Daniel had, and I had jumped over that barricade, maybe I could have saved my parents. Rabosai, if we understood that Bishvili Nivra Ha'olam, because of me, the world was created. Ein Hadavar Talui Elabi, everything is dependent only on me. As Rav Biederman says, we all need to have vitamin B. Ein Hadavar Talui Elabi, on me, vitamin B. When I recognize my kochos, my uniqueness, when I recognize my contribution, that I can break down barricades with others, that I can break down barricades with the Malkos Shel Olam, with prayer, that nothing will stop me from getting what I believe is the correct thing. And what the Meraglim teach us is that their problem was they were grasshoppers, but not gigantic grasshoppers. If they had seen themselves as who they truly were, Malach, if we see ourselves as Shalach Lecha, that Hashem has sent us to this world, we're not going to walk around feeling inferior, but we'll walk around with our heads held high emotionally, spiritually, knowing as long as I have breath within me, I have purpose. Purpose gives me meaning. Meaning gives me direction. And that enables me to, Mirtz Hashem, with a lot of Siyata Dishmaya and davening, be successful in the endeavors Hashem puts in my way, in my Avodas Hashem.